Welcome to the Canine Classroom, a podcast for dog training professionals and dog enthusiasts where we discuss training, behavior, and everything in between. We're two friends and dog trainers that share a passion for dogs. We're constantly learning, exploring, and questioning each other's ideas as well as our own so we can become better at what we do. We're here to provide helpful advice, have open conversations, ask questions, get answers, as well as hear from colleagues and experts in the industry, regardless of method and training style. So take a seat and get your notepad out because class is in session. Hey guys, we're back. We are back on, I was going to fuck up our name again, the Canine Classroom. Vinny, I'm learning from Vinny. I'm Anthony DeMarinis or DeMarinis, whatever Vinny wants to call me. That's Vinny Viola. And today we are here with Julie Simons. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Why don't you tell everyone a little about yourself, who you are, what you do?
How far do you want me to go back? Like childhood?
Or just... No, not childhood.
Well, one thing that somebody might not know about me is that I worked at Xerox for 30 years as a software engineer.
Oh, cool.
So I went to UC Irvine and in California. I grew up in California. And tonight, after we are done here, I'm going to go watch them play basketball. Oh, nice. They made the fight. They're in the NIT competition for the college basketball, you know. And I worked at Xerox for 30 years. That's probably about 6 years ago. I left Xerox. I was starting to get more unhappy there, just, you know, changes in corporation, in corporate America and everything. And I had started doing Fenzi already. I had been asked to teach for Fenzi 12 years ago or so. And so I left, you know, corporate America, built a training building. And it was a timely time to do that because so many places that we used to go train at had shut their doors, moved away. And there was no place for us to train, you know, back when we were mainly doing obedience and agility, we would rent like agility, dirty agility barns and things like that. See, this is that noisy thing I told you about. And my dog's chewing on a bone. So I built this building and I couldn't believe I built this. What was it, 48 by 80 building on our property? It's nice, right, Anthony?
Yeah, you do have a nice building.
It's nice. So yes, that was kind of
it's what I want one day when I have a property and I have a property that's big enough that can hold a training building on it.
I was thinking the other day that people probably think I'm out there all the time and I'm not. I sometimes get the right amount of training in. I go out there maybe twice a day, short period, like a half an hour training, or I don't go out there at all for days, or I go out there and like try to do all my training in like 2 hours and the puppies are completely overtired. But no, it is nice to have. And sometimes it's just easier to, you know, you can train in your house and stuff too. So I built a training building and it's been nice. I rent it out and I teach my own classes. But since I do a lot of online stuff, I have to balance that. And I don't teach as much in person as probably some other trainers. And then I know some trainers who do only online training. So I try to do a little bit of both. I know people really like the in-person, you know, hands-on, eyes-on kind of stuff. So I've been doing that because my Moxie is sick. So I remember she was a puppy when I had the building. So it's been about 6 years with that building. So besides being a full-time faculty member at Fenzi Dog Sports Academy, which was just an awesome, you know, opportunity when I was asked to teach for them. And then, you know, kind of solidified my corporation, Savvy Dog Sports. Kind of a funny story, my name before that, you know, I just kind of keep naming it after my dogs. My first dog was Rival, who taught me, you know, so much. And that's how I got into dog stuff. She was just amazing. And it taught me how well we can communicate with our dogs and the teamwork, and she was just an amazing dog. And so it was called Canine Rivalry, And so then when we built the building, you know, my husband and I were talking about it. He's like, oh, you should keep Canine Ravelry and like have like two dogs like boxing it out. And I'm like, I don't think that's really what I want to like, you know, have as my like logo, you know. So I got thinking, I had my dog at the time, Savvy, who passed away recently. And I thought, you know, Savvy is a cool name, right? So the verb or adjective or whatever that is. And so I came up with Savvy Dog Sports. So my business name became Savvy Dog Sports, and it's great. Have a cute logo showing the different sports, because where my background is with dog training is I got this great dog rival. I started doing, you know, we all went to obedience classes, started doing obedience. I got into agility back kind of in the heyday, I would say early 1990s. I'm gonna give my age away, and started tracking when she was young. And then it wasn't until she was like 12 years old, there was a local tracking test, and somebody says, get your dog ready, certified. And I got my first tracking title, a TD. So I did tracking. She got a confirmation championship. I handled her to a confirmation, got her obedience championship, and that was a big deal. I got her OCH. So she's my first and only OCH obedience dog. And then once I started getting, you know, more dogs, there was more sports, right? Nose work came about, and just kind of got into more other activities. I did some more herding. So I, with that one dog, Rival, I did obedience, confirmation, tracking, and agility. So I list the right ones. And I just love the versatility. Absolutely love the versatility. And I've tried to kind of like, well, maybe this is just too much. I don't want to be a jack of all trades. I love to be good at, you know, certain things. And I actually was, you know, back then it was, I would say, pretty easy to be top of your game in multiple sports. Now with the, you know, levels of competition get harder, and the criteria and the behaviors are, you know, more involved. It's a little bit harder to be the top of your game in multiple sports. But I've never given that up. I've now have gosh, I can't even count. Savvy, Drac, Moxie, the puppy, four dogs since then. And I still have to do, I do all the sports. I can't just do one, but I'm not doing all of them with all of them. Like, that's what I used to do. Like, all of them are going to do tracking. All of them we're going to do agility. All of them we're going to are doing nose work. Obedience is the one sport that kind of fell off a little bit during COVID. I just decided that I just was enjoying some of the other sports more, and just that took a little bit of a backseat, mainly because of the dogs I had at the time. I just thought, you know, I just, you know, to get them into the novel places and to deal with some of the stuff, I just didn't want to actually and put the work I had to in with those particular dogs. So that's kind of what I wouldn't say my claim to fame, but I just love the versatility, and I think that each all the behaviors I train, you know, benefit the other one. And there's a lot of reuse and overlap, and it just makes the training other sports a lot easier. And I've also enjoyed being like a student of some new sports like herding, and of course learning nose work at the time. And when I started doing nose work, there was nobody in my area doing it, so I was the only one doing it. And I remember going to my first ORT and my first, you know, nose work one, and you know, I didn't know anybody, and I waited to get my nose work one before I taught because I felt like I had to have some kind of credentials, and that's where that kind of started, and getting into nose work. And that's kind of just the love, my love. I just, there's something about it. It's just a uniqueness about it, and I'm slowly getting some of my original, you know, friends from the 90s and whatever, just to the ones I've met over the last, you know, 20 years to like tune into nose work and give it a try. You know, maybe they have a injury ending, you know, agility situation with their dog, or they have an older dog, or it's so much more popular now, right? So I'm kind of getting more people into nose work. So I do really love that. But I also just love agility, and have, I can't say I love the aspect of herding, but it's the hardest sport I ever did. Just, you know, just as I can't add any more sports. They're like, you should go do barn hunt. And I said, I just, please don't let anybody let me go do barn hunt.
Well, why don't you? I want you to tell, like, I would love for you to tell us, I guess, first, just so we could start, like, making it maybe simplify it first. Like, what is nose work? And then we can kind of dive into that because that's, you know, like, that's what we want to really chat about. So, yeah, why don't you tell us?
Yeah. So, nose work is kind of a funny name, I guess, if just for somebody who doesn't know at all what it is, right? And it's just based on real detection training. It was created by some retired military folks out in California who, after they retired, they went and worked in shelters. And then they thought, wow, these shelter dogs would really benefit from like a game version of what we did in professional detection. So that's where it came from, with shelter dogs. And they saw the benefit of kind of putting structure around the sniffing, game. And then it just grew. I knew one of the first COs in California, and she just had shared some stories about how their little, first trial was like 10 people or something. And then how it literally grew from this homegrown group in California. And then it slowly went across, the United States. So by the time I heard about it, I was trying to calculate that, maybe in 2012 is when I heard about it, but it had already been going on in the East Coast for many years. So I was already like, God, I'm behind, but I actually was ahead, at least in my area. And it was the one time that I had an opportunity to get into something kind of early, and be one of the early adapters of the sport. But it's based on real detection training. And it's so this is NACSW was the one that started it. And man, there are so many organizations now that do scent work, AKC, USCSS, CPE, PSD. I don't know, I'm gonna like there's so many more different countries have them. But it's based on, we use essential oils. It was determined that would be a good scent to work with. So we search for birch, anise, and clove, and NACSW. And AKC has a fourth odor, cypress, which I actually got to go work on that because I'm in a trial in a couple of weeks. But what's nice is essential oils have like a common component, so it's pretty easy to train additional odors once you've taught the basics. So they have elements, which is really cool. You have an interior search, what you're going to search the inside, defined as an area with four walls and a ceiling. Exteriors is outside, and that actually can't have, I can't remember like whatever they define as an exterior. Sometimes an outside porch with like that screening is considered exterior, but it's mainly like outdoors. And then you have containers. Containers are boxes, plastic boxes, cardboard, plastic, metal containers. They're all vented. So the odor's, pretty accessible. And then there's vehicle searches in NACSW. The vehicle searches are fun. They're like big containers. I kind of think of them as just like three big containers out there. And then AKC has a buried element, which is kind of a love and hate for that because it's kind of a neat thing to have odor in water or sand, and your dog has to find them in big container bins. They used to have them buried in the ground, and then that created problems across the country when certain areas of the United States had, just areas of just, the red ants, or I can't remember, some of the soil had things in there you don't want your dog sniffing. But there's just a lot of work with the heavy maneuvering of the buried aspects of the sand and water. But basically, the main ones are the four: interior, exterior, vehicles, and containers. And yeah, you're just your dog is source is looking to hunt and source where the hide is. We call them hides, and there are hides, in the search environment. And then it just goes up from like levels. There's levels of, difficulty.
And I know, like any what's cool in nose work is it's a sport where any dog at any age can basically start. It's not like a lot of the other sports where you need to begin very young. So how I'm curious though, how young generally do people start actually teaching young dogs or puppies odor? Like what's typically like the age that people will start?
Yeah, like any training, right? There's going to be a wide range of opinions on that. And it is interesting how nose work, this fun little innocent sport that we all got into, can get kind of controversial with training. And but I do start around 3 or 4 months. I do think it's more important to work on relationship and not Try to push too much early, but it is something that you could easily do with Anpup because you might just train a couple minutes a day to imprint odor. Now, what I've learned about with the professional detection dogs, they will actually be imprinting them, when they're born. They're already introducing them to through their odor that they're going to be, professionally working in. But I think, if 4 to 5 months is, probably a good time. It's not late at all. But there's some people who believe that, puppies go through different stages and maybe starting them at that age, they could be going through a fear period. I've just never seen that as a problem. I mean, if you should be working it, you should be starting at home in safe environments. There shouldn't be anything that they're fearful of when you're training them from the start. But you could definitely start them as young as, 3 or 4 months.
So one thing that I was thinking about, and part of why I wanted to have you on is because I know that you're a serious competitor in nose work.
I try to be,
And you only have a couple of only a couple of titles and ribbons. It's fine.
a couple.
But I wanted to switch gears to more of the owner aspect of things for a second, like the pet dog owner. So I wanted to kind of, I guess, have you tell us maybe what the benefits could be for like an average, I don't want to say average isn't this bad thing, so I don't want it to come across like that, but like your average pet dog client, what would be maybe some benefits to this sport if they didn't maybe want to compete, but they wanted to do an activity with their dog? Especially like those reactive dogs. I think it's something that's really good for reactivity, even for dogs who compete, honestly, because dogs who are reactive, they're there by themselves for the most part, except for maybe when they're online to get ready to actually compete. But otherwise, they're in a room with maybe just a few other people like judging and everything. So yeah, why don't you tell us, I guess, a little bit about like the benefits of what nose work can do for just like a pet dog.
Yeah, when I started, I would just recruit my, my dog training friends to go to my first class so I could get experience teaching it. But over time, I do think I do actually get a lot of pet dog owners that come in who don't do sports training, but they have a knowledge of it, or maybe they've dabbled in something, not seriously, but they want to try something in this venue versus like obedience or whatever, and. It is great for pet teams, for pet owners, because first off, they find that they love it and they actually get involved in sports, right? They actually, it's almost like a they get introduced into the sport world through learning this game. And people who say I'm never going to compete, they usually do. And that's one thing that I have learned, whatever sport it is, I find that I'm going to train the pet people the same way as my sports people. Because if you kind of cut corners because they're just doing it for fun and then they decide they want to compete, well, you've kind of created some gaps. But it's beneficial because it allows the dog to use their nose. There's so many studies and information out there about how we know the dog's brain is made up like 30 to 40% is the olfactory system. So anytime that the dog is sniffing and exploring, it's going through their brain. And so it just like triggers their brain. It just triggers so many positive things. There's like a dopamine rush when they're exploring, and they build confidence from that. I mean, there's just again known studies that that's how the dogs learn about the world and how they're going to gain confidence. So definitely with some of the sensitive or reactive dogs, it's very enriching for them. They like to move. It's movement. One of the good examples when I was reading, kind of reading more about this, so I can learn more about the brain and stuff, they talk about children. And if you think about when you're sitting down for like a family dinner and the fussy, toddler or kid, and you're always telling them to put your hand, keep your hands off of people and sit down and don't move around. But you're kind of restricting their development because that's why kids do that. That's why kids like are moving around and they're learning about the world around. They're picking up stuff, putting it in their mouth. And then by you telling them to stop doing all that, which of course there's times you probably have to, you're kind of minimizing their access to learning about the world and troubleshooting and figuring things out and what to do and what not to do. It's the same with the dogs. That's how they're going to explore and learn and grow and develop more cognitive strengths and stuff. And it's just like that kind of helps me relate it to like the human side of it too. And there's the brain is always developing new neural pathways. And so if you develop, strong feelings about things because you're hunting and searching and using your nose and having a job, you can kind of handle maybe things that you might have been worried about before. One risk is sometimes people throw their sensitive or reactive dogs in the nose work without kind of being more careful about it. And so they aren't going to get that benefit because your dog is not going to naturally like not be worried. Like they're going to be working, but still like having that concern of the environment. You have to be really careful that you do still take it slowly and build up their confidence to it and have other tools to manage a situation that you can't control. Because a lot of what we do with nose work, if you do start expanding and progressing, you're going to go to novel places and public places. And that's where some of the triggers are going to happen with dogs, right? Other people, other dogs, things like that. But it just has shown to be therapeutic. Senior dogs, veterinarians can't believe a change in say a dog that's maybe showing some kind of cognitive decline. So the person picks up nose work, starts doing nose work, and then they realize their dog is just like better overall health. And so there's just the kind of just I don't know how much is proven, but just experience and case studies or whatever. It just really enriches the dog's life. Just like if you go on walks and stuff, we want to let them sniff. A lot of times maybe, we're always impatient, kind of pulling our dog off and sniffing. It's kind of like we should let them sniff where they want to sniff. And then when they're doing the structured game, it's just simulating that, but having like a focus. I also feel that it creates partnership, so it's going to create a partnership between you and your dog, which is always so incredibly strong. And then that's how I mentioned earlier, my first dog Rival, I didn't know any of this stuff was capable. I mean, to capable of communicating with your dog and having them want to work for you. And it was just an amazing feeling. And I think for pet people to experience that, and probably the most important thing is it tires them out. You could run your dog for an hour, or you could do nose work for 10 minutes or tracking or whatever, and your dog will be more tired after doing like a track. Or a short track, like on the grass, or like a nose work, they will be more tired because it's very mentally kind of strenuous. So it's going to lower their arousal more than trying to like build up their stamina by running for an hour or something. So it just really satisfies them in so many ways because it is tiring and they like to do it.
I have a question, sort of about some of that. One of the things I was just wondering, do you find that a dog, just like your average pet dog who is not very driven, and motivated, or is not like a sport dog, do you find that those dogs enjoy it just the same? And do you also find that it's more difficult to teach those dogs this type of sport?
I mean, that goes to even like a person who's trying to do the sport, they can struggle with a dog that's low, that has a lower drive or lower motivation. And there's ways you can work with that. I mean, it's so much of, I'm actually teaching a class right now on building resilience in nose work dogs. So dogs have already been in the sport and they're struggle they have struggles, whether being distracted or just lack of understanding the task. And it's so much of it is the breed predisposition and their temperament. And I would say there's a very small percentage where it's just hard to get them motivated. But for the most part, I mean, but that could be true of like any sport, right? But for the most part, there is something about the sport that the dogs really gravitate to and they do enjoy. And there's other things you can do. Like I get my dogs right on odor, right on the target odor. A lot of people start on dogs on food. They do food searching. And I'm not against food searching. I do think there are some of the teams I've worked with that would have benefited if they did a couple months of food searching, because that takes the pressure off of you. You don't care if your dog doesn't get the cookie, but boy, do we, right, Anthony, put a lot of stake into finding that birch. Like, for some reason, once it becomes a birch hide, it becomes all important and the end of the world, and we're a failure if our dog doesn't find it. But if they don't find like a piece of food, we don't care about it. So I think sometimes it's just the mindset of the handler that the food searching takes some of the pressure off. And that's another way you could, that's where they probably start a lot of the shelter dogs. Actually, NICSW as well. And they do food pairing. You'll pair the hides with the food, and then you transition it to the odor. So there's the ways, but I've even had dogs who you food pair, and it's, if they're not food motivated, that also doesn't work. But there's a lot of, I like having an operant dog. So because I teach nose work with some operant training, making a choice, understanding the cause and effect of this odor pays, and building that understanding and that problem solving and the cognitive development, if they understand that, then it usually comes together. Usually comes together. But for sure, I'm just gonna say across the board, whether it's pet dogs or it's sports dogs, I find both at both type of temperaments. I find pet dogs that are like over the top. People, want to do something with them. And I have sports people who want to move a dog that just isn't that interested in whatever activity. So I don't necessarily find it as unique to just pet dogs that have less drive. I think it's across the board. You're going to find pockets of that. I hope I answered your
Do you,
question.
sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was wondering if you guys both notice the behavior of dogs outside of nose work being different after they learn nose work. So like if your dogs are just out on a hike in the woods, do you feel like they're different than a re like just an average, maybe not an average dog, but just anyone that hasn't done nose work? Like, do you notice a change in how they're using their nose outside of the sport? And
Yeah,
like, what does that look like?
I've actually heard that from a couple of clients even more recently, that they didn't really realize the change in their dog from after doing nose work, that they had a heightened awareness of their environment in a good way. Maybe sometimes could be more aware of things that might bother them, but in general, it's they acted differently. They was more engaged in their walks, to more sniffing. Also, one particular client, the dog was more aware of the hand of the owner's or the human's emotions, and if she had forgotten her medicine or was hungry, and the dog was aware of her state of mind, and they can smell how we're sweating and everything, and she realized that on a particularly bad day, her dog didn't search as well because the dog was worried about her, because the dog was so super more aware of the situation, because she believes because of the nose work. Sensitive dog owners have told me that too, that they believe that these dogs excel at these type of sports because they're uber aware of their senses because of their sensitivity. I just think in general it increases our confidence. You could talk about that. It's kind of an easy word we can describe. I think sometimes motivation and drive kind of hard to describe, or we have different definitions, but it just builds our confidence, I think. And it Yeah, I just think you see a more engaged dog, a dog who gets excited to go do something, a dog that you in general, like they might, a dog who maybe never used to like hang out with you on the couch are doing that now. I've heard that too. Like, dogs are like, they're more bonded to you. And that's just a cool thing. And I think it's just generally, it's overall health. Like I said, overall the cognitive benefit, if they were having some, decline mentally. I think those are some of the examples that I've heard about and that I've seen. I was telling somebody the other day about, my dogs who are advanced in nose work, they have championships. I don't know when it switched, but at one point, I always had a little bit of distractedness, but then one time I'm like, they know what they're doing. They're pulling me into the search area. They know exactly what they're doing. They're not distracted. They're totally 100% focused. And it just kind of like Just with it just stacks on top of each other. Like the confidence just continues to build, and you don't necessarily see it. And then just they are a dog that like goes to doors and like, let me in this door, like the strange place we're at, and they want to go in a door, and that's just pretty cool. And I think it just builds they're empowered, they're confident, they trust you. You're building trust, with your dog and vice versa, and it just carries over and other stuff. So it definitely does. And I don't know if it's as tangible as, I'm trying to describe it, but I think it's just an overall demeanor and confidence.
Do you the dogs I just actually heard the dogs barking. It's kind of funny because I just said to you, oh yeah, no, Zoom blocks out the
My guess is my
barking.
puppy is trying to get to a ball that's somewhere hidden because I have balls hidden because she's obsessed.
I wanted to ask you about food searching a little bit because you mentioned it, but more, I guess, from like a general standpoint, like where people are, like especially trainers. I know when I was a newer trainer and I didn't know how to do nose work, one of the activities I would sometimes recommend is hiding treats places, or like maybe hiding them, whether it was in a towel or in a box, and you get some boxes and just put treats in them, or do like little hide and seek games and things like that. Where, I guess, like, what are your thoughts on that? Obviously, that's very different than teaching nose work, like the way that you do it, but what are your thoughts on that? Like for an average client that has just their pet and they don't have a lot of time maybe to train.
So I'm not a big fan of feeding treats in a box because, again, I'm coming from a sports world where if they ever decide to compete, they put distractors in boxes and you can train them off of that, but why you have to go through the extra step? I do a lot of let's say I do a lot. I don't to I know I'm not answering your question exactly right now. But for me, it's not too exciting for me to have
Least
my
you
dog.
realize. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, I feel like a politician. I don't.
Question, Julie. Come
What is the question?
on.
I personally don't get too excited about my dog searching for food because I think that's just so natural for them. And what's kind of ironic, now I would say my early dogs, I would proof them on that. But even my current dogs, there was like a piece of treat next to an agility wing that they didn't get during the agility sequence, and they never eat it. They never find it. They never eat it. They also, I go into I call it, we go into schools for noser classes. You've been there actually, Anthony. And I run my dogs as a like dog and demo dog before the class comes, and then they run, and then the not all of them, but some of the dogs come in, they just start eating all the treats left over by the kids in the school, and I didn't even realize these treats were there. And so again, it's just a different temperament of the dog or what they're kind of driven by. But I don't know why sometimes my dogs don't do that. I have to assume it's the training of value for odor, and that is the whole dopamine effect of that. It's less about the consumption of the thing, but the act of getting to that thing, right?
Yeah.
Is what the whole dopamine thing is. And or the seeking system of the brain. But that said, it definitely is an easy thing for pet people to do, and I don't have any problem with it at all. I mean, if you 100% know you're not going to do nose work, then I don't even think we're talking about nose work, right? You're just talking about some food games. And a lot of times I know people hide the bully sticks, like they'll hide their toys or their bully sticks, and that's another really fun activity. And actually, these dogs do really well at it. I think my dogs would actually suck at that for whatever reason. But give my dog a more structured task, and they're going to be better at it for some reason. But it absolutely is what a lot of people do. And I do start now from a handling perspective before dogs are on odor or actually too far along in odor. I do some treat scatters and some con two different contexts to just practice our handling, following our dog as they eat food, and then also if the dog's concerned about tight spaces or whatever, like going under things, I'll just toss treats under something just to kind of take away the pressure of nose work. Or I don't want the nose work hide to become a thing that they're concerned about going into the space. So using food for some of those focused areas where they might con be concerned. Like if I go into the bathroom, my dogs hate search going into bathrooms, like public bathrooms, the floor, the drain. I don't know what it is. Lots of dogs have trouble with locker rooms, bathrooms. And I'll just go in there and throw some treats around because if I'm going to try to make them search, they're going to have like a negative res emotional response to the act of the my task. So there's definitely benefits of using food as a primary reinforcement, and that's why it's so powerful. So, yeah, it is. I'm just so like, I want to put the dogs on odor.
I have a personal question about that. So, do you think Cat would have an issue going into a public bathroom and working in that environment?
She actually went into a locker room recently, and she was fine.
Okay.
But I want to tell you. Oh.
I was just going to ask you, I was asking you that because I know how she plays. So, I was going to say, would you think of using play
Yeah, I would use a
rather
toy with
than
her.
like food scattering
Yeah.
in a locker room or public space? Would like a dog like her, would you switch play?
I would absolutely, and I'm actually even using my toy reward more. I'm channeling my Anthony, routine there. And no, she's really perked up when I use the toy. And that goes to show about the reinforcement, right? She's fine with food. But I want to go back to a quick story. Is I did decide I'm gonna start with some food. I did start my puppy on food searches as she was a puppy. I had enough to deal with, I had enough to learn with her, not to deal with, to learn. And she kind of was like, eh. She was like, meh. And then somebody said, well, have her search for your tennis ball. And I said, I will never do that. I will never, because I'll be done. They put tennis balls out and it's distractors. And I'm like, I'll be done. She knows there's like a tennis ball up in a drawer or in a cabinet up in our kitchen, and she'll just stare there and bark at it. But luckily, by the way, I put tennis balls in boxes and she completely ignores them. But anyway, I switched to this peanut butter blob method. It's a cool way that Holly Bouchard starts dogs, and she mixes peanut butter, like Play-Doh recipe. It's just like sugar, peanut butter, flour, and you can stick it stuff. So it's cool. You can like stick it on surfaces. And so the first couple times the puppy would find it and eat it. And then like the second or third session, she started taking them and running off, like totally possessing the food. And I'm like, this isn't working with this dog. So I said, I'm just gonna put her on odor. I put her on over, and like the light switched on for her. Now she's a very different dog, a purposeful bred dog for sports. But that was really interesting. I was like, I'm gonna do the food thing first, and she literally took off with the food. She just like took it and ran away. And then the minute I started having her find odor after she was conditioned to it just, the light bulb went on for her. So we know a lot of it is what the dog's gonna take too. But I think if you're gonna do food searches, you should start with that first. Because once you put your dog on odor, I don't wanna be doing a lot of food searches, except for very specific things. Like I said, a dog is worried about space or flooring, but even flooring is weird. Like my dog Drac is worried about slippery floors. So why am I throwing treats where he's gonna like skid and slip? So I've had to be careful about that. But yeah, it's the similar process, right? They're searching for hidden food, they're searching for hidden toys or hidden bully sticks, hidden antlers, shed antlers, or hidden essential oil. And so it's the same task, the same process that will be beneficial to the dogs. I do find that there is a extra element of the operant process that they learn to find a non-primary source, right? I mean, they find food because they need it to survive and things like that. So, or they're obsessed with toys. But to teach a dog to find something as odd as birch is pretty cool, and they can really learn that quite easily,
I
quite
was,
easily.
yeah, and I was asking this question about the food partially because, like I was saying, as a newer trainer, it was just like an activity that you see kind of around a lot in circles where maybe people, professional trainers, are either newer or just don't participate in sports at all. But I think as I've kind of learned over time, I feel like there are certain skills that trainers should learn. I think play skills is definitely one of those things, and that can be for confidence building and also relationship building with just a client with their pet dog. But I think sometimes about sports because I do think sports can make you a much better trainer because you're sitting there working with your dog and trying to achieve specific goals and tasks, and it makes you have to think on your feet a little bit more. But I sometimes wonder what sports, if there were sports that a pet trainer should learn or participate in, is there one in particular that maybe would benefit them most, not just as a handler and trainer, but also something for their clients? And I think sometimes I find nose work tends to, in my head, when I think about it, nose work tends to be up at the top of that list because, in a lot of ways, even though it's challenging, it's easy to do compared to agility. You have to go to a place. Bite work, you need other people helping you half the time, right, Minnie?
Barn hunt. I was going to say barn hunt, but barn hunt, you have to go where there's rats and your dog has to work in the more distracting
Well, you could
environment.
easily buy a rat and just keep it in your house and then
Oh
let
yeah, like most people are gonna do that. But I think the thing about barn hunt is you don't there's you can go with just without training. I mean, I'm not saying there's not training involved eventually,
Exactly.
but so that would be something that a lot of people do go to, and their dogs are, if they're terriers or whatever, that they're gonna really go, they're really gonna take to it. And I know of a lot of students that do both. The only time I had a problem was when I actually gave a nose work seminar in the place that people did nose work. Not nose work, barn hunt. Again, it was years and years ago. This dog was like, nope, this is where I do barn hunt, and they would not, engage with the sport. But
I had
yeah.
that issue with Journey at a place I sometimes go to rent sheep and do herding lessons. And there was a couple of agility trials that I've done there, but this one day it was like fresh in his head that the sheep were there and we were running the course and he actually left the course to go to the left where the sheep were just opposite, like just on the other side of the door. So I've had that problem myself in a competition. But I guess like my question like was partially, do you find that nose work is a, even if it's not something again that a trainer is competing in, just to have some basic knowledge of it because it can benefit an everyday client so well, do you find that that can like help that pet trainer maybe with their clients?
I do, and like I said, there's a ways around it because you can always pair the odor. You could still put the food with the odor, and you could do that for a long time, and then they might just realize that the dog actually understands that the odor is valuable too. I
Yeah.
do, and I do think it is exactly what you said. There's not a whole lot of supplies. You can work at home, and I do. And that's why I try to encourage, people to go to online training. There's still like a pushback on that. People who like to go to the weekly classes, social, or they just, aren't always on their computer. But of all the sports to train, and I promise these people that once you just get on odor, then you'll have that opportunities to get into classes. You'll get opportunities to have the social opportunities. But it's so easy to teach odor at home, with instruction. And work with your dog in a very comfortable, safe place, especially if they're not only especially if they're reactive or sensitive, but maybe you don't even know that your dog is that or not. So you can kind of train them the skill that then they can take on the road and have something that's familiar, and they'll have some skills already. So yeah, I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you.
Yeah, and I think that the And even your point about like the online stuff, I mean, I'll admit sometimes with online things, sometimes I'm like, no, I want to do this stuff in person. I want to go in person and learn hands-on. That's how I am. Like I'm more of like a tangible type of learner, and I want to be there on the spot to see like what I'm doing wrong and be told that like what I should be doing better. I think the online stuff is good though in some aspects, like especially for nose work. I do think that it can benefit. Like I have a few clients now who are doing one of, I think you sent me one of the online classes because your class wasn't running, and I have two or three clients right now doing that online course, and I think it's benefiting them to some degree. But I do think like the hands-on piece, if there was like a local nose work class going on at the time, like I think that would be great because there is some of that camaraderie piece. I do think there's also that, so like to the social aspect you were saying, but also even just to get a dog into a novel environment, assuming they're able to work in that environment well. I do think that there's some benefit to that for sure, but I think you're right. Like with a pet client, even if they could just take an online class that's inexpensive and just learn those skills, I do think it's beneficial. I guess like part of why I was asking this is because just from that trainer standpoint, and maybe, you know, maybe Vinny has something to say on this point, but I think there are a good amount of trainers, pet trainers out there who are good, but, and I'm not saying that because I'm saying I'm better than them or anything. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I think that there are just a lot of pet trainers who are almost reserved or hold themselves back to want to learn a sport. Like it's almost, I don't want to say like it's almost beneath them to do it. I just think it's interesting how, because I know I have a few friends who they just don't want to do sports, and it's almost like they kind of shrug it off like it's
Like a dirt, it's a
a
dirty
dirty
word.
thing. Yeah, it's almost like this dirty thing, but I just find for certain owners this is such a easy thing to just teach like those beginning steps to help teach a dog something that can enrich them and develop that relationship piece.
Well, and you got to think about it. Every person started as a pet dog trainer, as a pet
Yeah.
owner.
Yeah.
Every one of us started with a pet and got into it, and then. And I think that's a good point, that I think we're not, maybe even the trainers themselves are selling themselves short, but I think we're selling the dog short that they're able to do this kind of stuff. And like I said, you can, once you get your dog on odor, for the most cases, you can get into like matches and classes. What's really hard is to get started into the local class. Like I did just start two local classes a couple months ago, but it'll be a very long time because that my classes stay with me forever. I have attrition, of course, so I do have some attrition. But for the most part, I'm still teaching the same classes I started 6 years ago. They don't go away. And then I'm not going to do a 6 week class and then say, sorry, I don't have anything else for you, you know? I mean,
Right.
I guess I could do, I kind of am thinking of like doing that and saying, now you can go be resourceful and take some lessons elsewhere and online. And just, that's what I wanted to say earlier, actually, is my online students progress faster than my in-person ones because I only have my in-person one an hour and a half a week, and I don't even teach them every week. After a while, we go twice a month. My online students get me every day for six, you know, they could possibly get me every day. And I also can roll out more material. So there's just a dialogue that you can have online that you can't have in a weekly class. So I think that having people work online is teaching them to be resourceful and learning from other people. But I understand that's difficult for some, or it's an investment they don't want to take. So people still try to get into an in-person class, and there's some to find for sure. And perhaps that could be what some pet trainers could bring to their clients, right? Like actually, you know, learn a little bit about it and take it to the next level. And it would be a super addition to a pet dog's offerings, because it's growing and it's not going away. The sport's not going away. It used to be the fastest growing sport in AKC. And yeah, it's just great. It because it's so great, we talked about earlier, all the benefits for the dog. It's There's something there. There's something there. And it's worth pursuing. So Vinny, who is all new to this, and what is it sounding like to you? Like fun stuff or
So what I find interesting is that the dog's sense of smell is so strong, and it's other than obviously it's popular to let your dog sniff, it's kind of overlooked. I'm wondering your thoughts on confidence building, nervous dogs. We've all seen the dogs that are nervous but like want to sniff you. But they don't necessarily want to say hi to you. Like they're getting information. I'm thinking about reactive dogs. I'm thinking about even aggression. There's not saying I do this, but there's this prevailing method of like getting dogs to look and expose them to seeing triggers, but not as much talk about like smelling. Maybe smelling different things, smelling things that might make them uncomfortable. I don't know if that sounds crazy, but yeah, that's
No,
just what's going on in my mind when I hear you guys talking, because I don't do nose work. I do, there's some nose work elements to the Mondu ring that I do, but it's more like go find the guy and bark at him and then bite him. So there's a little wood where you search for like a piece of wood, but it's not the type of nose work that you guys are doing. But that's kind of what's going on in my mind is like, you're teaching the dog to use the sense that's actually their strongest, and like, with like agility or bite, like wait, like we're focusing on these things that are not their strongest sense, if that makes sense, as much as their smell. And I find that kind of interesting that you guys are honing this attribute that our dogs are so powerful in that we kind of like don't even, you kind of just don't even think about it a lot. As someone like me, that's more not into nose work.
we're going to change that, number one.
Ha
But it's funny you talk about looking at triggers because I'm all into this look at that game because I picked up a little bit of information with Cat. I just applied the first couple steps and I was already able to apply it to strangers on a walk on a trail. I usually look at that. And it was interesting. I was going a little off topic, but I was talking to somebody recently about it and they said, "Oh my God, I always like pulled my dog away from the thing. I never thought about letting them like look at that." I'm like, "Yeah, like there's like an axe murderer running after me or something. I'm gonna like look at it or like I'm not gonna, I can't ignore, I can't just pretend like it's not there or whatever is my example." But you actually make a really good point about that. Like if there that's just such a strong sense for the dogs, can we use the sense of smell to get through some concerns, some that might that worry them? I think that's and the only example I thought of, and again from a sports training sort of thing, is like I will use dog urine. I'll use urine for dogs who get really distracted by urine, who might actually be concerned about another dog smell, if that's kind of a concerning thing or more just a I want to mark there or whatever. But we'll put urine in a container. We even get you can even buy like animal critter smells and train the dogs against, just like to ignore that, to go to the odor. Like you pick your odor to get your reward versus this urine. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting a concept, but it also made me think about, we didn't even talk about, is handler scent. Another component of no scent work, it's called more scent work. AKC has a scent work division, and NASDA has an organization where you have your dog, the first level is your dog finds your own scent. So that's going to kind of be a building step if you're going to do like scent article discrimination. And there's discrimination in, is there discrimination in what you guys do, monitoring? I don't think so.
Yeah, so like
There
that's like the
is.
little woods. So you get like a little
You,
dowel
oh,
and you rub that in your hand, and then you have to put that amongst a bunch of other dowels that are all the same.
Exactly. So and that's another thing that I teach. It's a newer class called Lost Item Recovery, and I kind of was asked to teach it. And I'm like, oh God. And they're like, well, if you don't do it, we're gonna have somebody else do it. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And it actually was hugely success. And and what's cool about it is the next level is you teach them to find, it's a match to sample. So I was able to say, and I heard you talking with Aaron about the a shed. If the dog, if somebody's, if you're hiding your own stuff and your dog's really going off of your scent, or does a dog, pick up your friend's scent. You brought a box home from Vinny or something, Anthony, and your dog noticed it. But what the school about the NASDA is, I actually showed how to teach. Like I got my friend Karen's sock And she literally ripped him off her feet after a walk. And I came home and I got my dog and I put him in, I had him there in a baggie, and I immediately like taught him this protocol. First, the protocol was on my own scent, but and they it was just amazing. When they sniffed her sock, they were like, oh, they really noticed the change in the. And then I had like a pile of stuff, and they actually found it from a matched sample. So you know, I think that that's not obviously using a trigger thing that bothers them, but you know, I don't know if that's something that could extend to that. But it's just teaching the dog this really cool concept. It's like, to me, it's like search and, I don't know, like find Timmy lost in the woods. Here's smell Timmy's shirt and go find Timmy, you know. And it's obviously based on, has to be what they do a little bit for that type of rescue, you know, search and rescue, and based off of a scent that somebody, you know, that a dog can trail. But just, there's just such cool aspects of that. So if somebody like a pet person doesn't want to get involved with the odors and dealing with that kind of stuff, I even had somebody who says they start all their students on the handler discrimination first, or the handler odor first, and then they go to the oil, and they see like a really nice progression from that. And I've actually just did not expect to hear this in my one class, Loss and Recovery, that these nose work dogs who then were trying this handler thing, some had experience with it, some didn't. They said their dogs prefer the handler scent activity over the odor. That just almost that maybe that's more of an organic type smell, that they were more interested in searching than for something that we picked, you know, essential oil. So yeah, it's really fascinating. You know, I love tracking. We didn't talk about tracking, but just any kind of scent sports that I really gravitated to. And I've always enjoyed teaching scent articles when I did obedience. I have a TDX and three TDs with my dogs, different dogs. And to me, that's almost one of my thrilling moments is my TD. I have two TDXs actually. Jack got one a couple years ago. And just that's to me is amazing too, is the tracking and their ability to understand that. And but I mean, I wouldn't expect a pet person to do tracking. But that's what's so cool about nose work and handler scent, if we want to bring that into the picture, that is something so attainable to pet people. And they obviously have a dog, so they enjoying a dog's company. And if they're, you know, going to a pet trainer, they want to learn some stuff. And to me, it's like a natural progression. So, but if they don't want to do it, I mean, it's obviously they don't have to, but they'd have to catch the bug. And I think sometimes doing the food searches is a way that they could start with that for sure.
Yeah, I could see that being more appealing as someone that hasn't done it myself, of like, I might see a client push back, like, why do I care if my dog can find clove? Like, you know, but if it's like,
You
my
lost
dog's gonna
your you
find my
lost just
glasses or
that
like
you
my
love.
keys or something like that, like, you know, because people do wanna have like, why am I doing this? Like, you know, if it's not like the confidence, like, because the confidence stuff I totally see. But yeah.
And that might not be something that they're going to see right away, because you know the confidence is going to build over time. But
Yeah.
that class, you know, there's a Facebook group for this class that I taught, and people will still write every I still hear stuff that like, oh my God, we lost, you know, my husband's always losing his ear pod, so we trained my dog to find it and he couldn't find it, and the dog found it in the cushion. And somebody lost their key, somebody found their glasses, somebody found their glove. It's really cool. They share the stories about, because they've taught their dog to do this, their dog can find their lost items. And that actually, can we just start all over again and talk about handler scent now? This whole aspect of pet trainers. But yeah, that's actually something I totally like. Just miss on my radar about that. But I think that's a cool way to, you know, Anthony, back to your original question, is they might think that's really cool. And to be honest, I teach it the exact same way as I teach nose work. It's a little different. I mean, because you're, I don't I, like I don't hold the thing in my hand, because your hand smells like you. So you just get the stuff on the ground, and I just start with the sock. I just start with a cotton sock, and you just rub it. It makes it kind of hot, you know. You put, maybe have it in your pocket, or you wear it in your under your clothing, so it's really, or get some dirty laundry. And then your dog, you just, when they sniff it, you just reward them. You pick it up, you put it somewhere else, they sniff it, you reward them. Boy, they pick that, and then you start hiding that around the house. Like, to me, but you know, I'm speaking for me, that's really interesting to me, for my dog to find my lost sock.
My
To me,
dog's
that's
already got
super.
that one down. I've never taught him
And I
that
actually,
one.
and
He's
I
just
have,
running with the sock.
And
I've been yelling out
I've done my
for
wallet, my keys, my phone. So when I was teaching the
it.
class, I'm like, shit, I gotta teach my dogs these things now. And I was like, just rubbed my cell phone, hit it, and the dogs found it. It was really cool.
Yeah, Yeah, I think I just yeah, I think that like there's so many things like that. Like that's a good idea because I didn't think about that initially when I was even asking the question. I just think that there's certain things that we could do beyond just scattering some treats in the blades of grass in your backyard, or hiding, sprinkling treats in a towel and folding it, you know, until you can't fold it anymore and the dog's going to unroll it and find, like, I think there's just other things that you can do beyond that stuff that could maybe engage the dog more. And while I was thinking about you say you and Vinny saying that, I was even thinking about, I wonder if the re I don't know, but I wonder if the relationship component would be different with a dog that you're teaching some skill to, where they need to find the lost sock, where they need to find birch scent. I just wonder if there's a different relationship aspect there that gets built over time, as opposed to, okay, Fluffy found the treats buried in the towel, or the treats that like I or the kibble that I just grabbed out of the bowl to throw across the lawn for the dog to search for. I just wonder if there's a different relationship aspect or component there when you're actually having to work through stuff together.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I probably couldn't describe why, except that the food is something they're going to naturally do, and they would do that without you, versus training them, having that time that you spent together to actually train. I mean, I don't know. You guys have to obviously experience this, that you start getting your training stuff together and the dog is so excited. Or I wasn't feeling well last week, so I didn't do it much with my dogs, and boy, were they a pain in the butts. And then when I finally got, out to train with them, they were so incredibly excited. Like, I think I could have taught them like some miracle skill or something, because they were like so pumped. But of course they have a history and they've been trained that way. That's the life they've lived, since young dogs. But they definitely thrive and want to work. And then when you get more dogs, you rotate. They weren't waiting their turn. And I think I was even thinking the other day, like, I don't know how I could have my dogs, because when I wasn't doing much last week, like, if I didn't train them, they would be so unhappy and unfulfilled. I mean, it depends on the dogs. I mean, there's some dogs who just love to, like, lay on the couch and stuff, and that's great too, but I do think dogs like to work. I mean, I wouldn't do it if I didn't think the dogs enjoyed it. And it's just, yeah. It's I mean, it's to me, it's beneficial for both the person and the dog.
Yeah, I started nose work for fun, just on my own. Not with any aspirations to compete. I think I've told you that before. And I
We
really
had to fix. We had to fix all the stuff. I'm just kidding.
But
You brought a lot of really good training notes. Just to make sure I'm
I
on the
was going to
record.
say, honestly,
You
for someone really
brought a lot of good training to on your own to it.
it was funny because like I had no, like again, I had no aspirations of competing, so I was sloppy with it. Like we haven't talked about all the nuances really behind nose work, but even the little detailed things of, no, you put birch in that box, you can't now go ahead and put another scent in that box because now you're contaminating it, or your hands are contaminated with birch and now you just touched all that other shit over there and now you're contaminating all the things. And I didn't know that. I was just doing this in my basement or in my house, or like if I had time at a park and I was just doing stuff. I didn't wash my hands, I didn't do any of these things. It was just everything was contaminated, everything was a disaster, like if you were to see how it was then. But I was doing it just really for another activity to do with my dog.
And you can see that your dog, they work in spite of us, they do.
Yeah, that's
So,
true. Yeah, that is very true, especially Journey. But like I found that it really did help develop more of a relationship and connection. And unlike most people, I couldn't teach him using food rewards, because when I would hand him food for the longest time, He found it very aversive. So if I handed him a piece of food, he would shy away, like very hand shy, or he would even like cower and go in the corner, like training would be over, which is why I always say, like, his obedience, like some of his obedience skills just were horrible or not flashy at all, because I couldn't use food to like reward certain positions and things like that. But with nose work, I was only able to use toy rewards for the longest time. It was only recent within, when did we start training together? A year ago, I think. So it was maybe slightly before I started training with you that
It had to be at least, wasn't it at least 2 years ago, a year and a half?
maybe it's a year and a half. I don't
Seems forever. No, I'm just
Yeah,
kidding.
I know, it's true. But yeah, like it was only right before I started training with you that I was able to actually use food rewards for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just found it really did help a lot of relationship building.
Well, it's interesting that you said that because what you did bring to the table was your great marker reinforcements cues, and you had a really strong cue to you had under stimulus control. They, he didn't come off to your he didn't come off to your toy if you said something else, or he didn't come off if you didn't say it. He knew the understood the cue. And when you mentioned the beginning of the discussion about toy play and how that's important for dogs too, I'm circling back to my nose work students and saying there's those spaces in between or those pieces in between that they don't have, that the toy play is going to help. Teaching a marker system is going to help. Because it just strengthens the dog's, again, neural pathways, their cognitive development, your relationship, your way to communicate with your dog. You're going to be consistent and clear. And that's one of the problems sometimes as we talk about the sensitive dog or the pet dog is sometimes they need the clarity, and we don't teach the student, the people, how to be consistent and be clear to the dog so they don't get confused or shut down. So it quickly evolves into kind of like a little bit more intense training program if you get into the reinforcement markers and consistency and it does start, but that's just where it grows, right? That's where anything's going to grow when you want to learn something new. I just have personally found that if like agility people, I just want to go do it for fun. You're just gonna do something dangerous. You're going to then if you ever want to do it seriously, you've created a lot of bad habits. And so yeah, I think people who are pet people are if they were to do something like this, they would have to have a little bit of interest in doing more than food scattering.
Yeah, I just, yeah, I found it to be, like I was saying, I just found it to be something that really helped in a lot of areas because it took a lot of the pressure off in many respects. For at least for my dog, that was something I learned early on when I was teaching it. It really took a lot of pressure off of things compared to like agility. There was some pressure in some way, but he loves it so much that it was something that didn't bother him. But when I compare it to just regular training skills, that was something I really had to put on the back burner for a very long time with him because it was something that was just too much pressure for him. But when
What's
I
what was too much pressure?
just regular training
Oh,
skills,
regular training.
yeah,
Okay.
just your, yeah, just regular training skills, just basics, training skills. And when I introduced nose work, it was pretty, I would say it was early on. It was pretty early on, like maybe 6 months, something like that. So around that age, I think. And it was not something I did very often, but it was just something that I did with him for just fun. And the pressure was just taken away. It was interesting with him because training, just regular training, like stuff that I do with clients, things that I do with my other dog were things I couldn't really do with him. Anything that involved just basic training was just so challenging with him, and he found it to be so horrible for whatever the reason was, and he would be very avoidant. But then once we got into sports, agility, herding, nose work, it was so interesting to see that that's where he would thrive.
Well, yeah, you're kind of answering Minnie's question, right? What changes did you see in your dog when you started doing that? And
That's
sometimes it's hard to kind of it's described because it happens maybe slowly over time. You don't see it as it's happening, but then you're at the end and you're like, wait, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's a great sport, and Yeah, there's a lot more opportunities out there to trial if you want to trial. But again, you don't have again, there's online options to learn and grow. For me, I like to have goals and I like to complete stuff. I'm a completer finisher. If you take one of those tests, I'm a completer finisher. And yeah, I feel good about having the, reaching that title or just testing my abilities. It doesn't have to necessarily be a trial, but I like to test that I would accomplish something. So.
Yeah, and I wonder if like that also, I wonder if the dogs in some aspect have that sense in a way, like if they have that sense of completing the task, they found this, like they found the scent, and then boom, that reward happens, whether it's this little play event or you're rewarding with food or playing with the food, whatever it is. Like I just wonder about like the goal setting aspect that you're setting or accomplishing something.
I do find that dogs love to problem solve. I mean, you'll see it in different avenues of all training. They just really love to problem solve. And I think they even create situations where they can solve something. And I think that does make them feel good. I really do. And I think that's, you could see it with some of these Noser dogs. They just thrive. I also have some dogs that are a little bit more lower drive in my building, but you take them to somewhere novel and they're like kick ass. There's something about the novel environment that just stirs up their interest, and that it has to be just about the novelty of it. Like so some dogs who worry about the novelty, other dogs thrive off the novelty. And I'll say, just from a human perspective of that, and I wish I had more opportunity to go to the cool places that people go to for nose work trials, and they travel all over, like airplanes. They've searched airplanes, they've searched airplane hangars, which is a bunch of airplanes out on a field in California. People have searched, I've searched stadiums and museums. I've finally got one final one, finally searched school buses, go inside and out of school buses. And there's just such cool, like it really feels like real world, I've did obedience for so many years and I still do agility, but there's just something just unique about that. And I just did want to add that so many of the agility people, like just any person in their sport, they just love agility. They can't think of anything else they would love more. And I've had a number of agility people who that's all they did. A lot of people from California, it's a big sport out there. Their dog had an injury ending career for agility, and they said, "Well, I'll try nose work." They didn't realize how much they would like it, and the reason that they liked it because it was every search is different, like an agility course is. That's why I think a lot of people moved away from the obedience and stuff, because it's like it's like you do the same thing all the time. Not that doesn't make it's a hard skill because you're having to do the same in precision and everything, but they just did not realize how much they would love nose work and how much their dogs did too. And just because it was always different, you would go to a, every search is different, just like agility course. So that was kind of cool to have these people realize that. And I was thinking about what I might talk about, and one of the stories is when I got into nose work, we had agility club. It's called the Backyard Agility Club. And early, this is in the, I don't know if it was, like, when did I say I got started? I don't know how many years ago that was. We had a club meeting and we did a presentation on nose work, and everybody was just like, whatever. Nobody was interested in it. And now, like a handful of them all do nose work now. One of them has a league championship, but they at the time were just like not interested. And I remember bringing like my neighbor, I was trying to get two of my neighbors involved, and I brought myself over to their house and I was demoing it with my dog. And they were just like, but one of them is now doing nose work. So just started. So yeah, it was like I was like
It is cool though. I mean,
going around town.
I will say like the first, I think it was the first trial I did was the Element one, if I remember correctly. And it was cool to go. It was in New Jersey, so it was like 2 hours away, and it was just cool to go into this building. It was like a, I don't remember, like a trade school of some kind. And it was cool like to go into these places and just search rooms that like where things are just randomly hidden and you really don't know where it is. And your dog is indicating on the scent that you're teaching them. It really, I don't know. I don't even know how to really explain it. It's just so cool and fascinating to watch your dog work, at least like for me. When I
It
watch
is.
Journey work because of how intense he is with agility, it's just so crazy to me to see the intensity he has for nose work too. Like I'm a little bit surprised sometimes But to
And it's just going to build. So we should talk a little about Anthony. He got his level one interior, and he got his nose work one, and he's writing me today about what should I go. He's going to do a nose work two in a couple of weeks in my area, and yeah, it gets addicting. And I'm telling you, you're just going to see your dog like just get better and better and better. And there's something about it that's just hard to describe, the feeling of it, because it's of the. That's why I prefer an ACSW over AKC. Sometimes AKC is get some cool venues, but sometimes they're using a training building and they're just rings with like curtains around it, and you're just searching objects spread out versus, if they can find a really cool location. And AKC does do that, depending on what they can get. But it is really cool, the venues. And it could just be a trade school, but they might have like a mechanic section where they're teaching mechanics. You have cars elevated, and you have just like maybe a big entryway and a lobby, and it is really, really cool. There's yeah. And again, we're getting into with advanced levels, but there is something about it when the dog really, really takes to it, and they just have this focus that. I still am surprised that my dogs can do this.
Why don't before we wrap up, why don't you tell us a little about like the higher level stuff? I'm not even super familiar with those things. So like why don't you tell us a little bit about like the higher levels of nose work in competition?
Yeah, so the first two levels are no number hides. I'll just stick with NACSW. AKC has just, it's multifold. So just to keep it simple, although I don't know what people would do mostly, but it's like no number of hides. But once you get to the higher levels and the level three, it's unknown number of hides. And it could be unknown number under usually 0 to 3, but it could, if it's an element trial, it could be an unknown number, and they give, it could be unknown number completely or in a range, or they give ranges. And then, the search areas start to get bigger and bigger. And so then the next level is elite, and almost, most of them are unknown number searches, unknown number hides. I've had 10 in one. I don't see that as much anymore, but I had 7 at a recent trial, and it was huge area, huge area. So fun to run. You get like 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes. And so you're just having to trust your dog. You're supporting them. You just have some maybe strategic plans to get around the area, but it's just there's a point where you're like, the dog has been trained to do this, and if you try to think differently, if you try to think how odor is going to be or where hides might be, you're just going to screw up, because they'll think the dogs aren't going to work at serially in a row. Odor is going to be moving around, and they're going to be working threads of odors. And then you're doing, like maybe around 4 searches a day, large areas, small areas, cluttered areas. You can have elevated hides. You can have hides 10 feet high. You can have cracked hides in the ground. You can have what they call inaccessibles that are like deep, deep inaccessibles, like maybe behind, I've had where they had like a bunch of shopping carts, and it was way in the back of these whole thing of shopping carts. And the dog was going to indicate differently. They're going to bracket and circle and try to fight to get to it. They're not just going to do a nose freeze per se. You can have a contained hide in like a cabinet, in a drawer, things like that. So the hide placements get really exciting and different, and they are fun to train. Elevated is definitely a harder skill level, but some high hides work better than other high hides. But they definitely can catch odor as it lofts and falls down. And so that's basically, you have bigger search areas, longer search times, and more hides. And then you're going to have, unknown number. One of my summit trials, and summit is just the highest level right now in NACSW, we had this bonus search. We had unknown amount of time. And if you didn't call finish before the time ended, that you didn't know how long you had, then you would, lose, you would not have opportunity to gain some points. So that was really exciting. It's the first time I've actually done that. And so I guessed around what the time would be, 4 or 4.5 minutes. I called it 4:28. I did call in time, but I didn't get all the hides, so I didn't get the extra bonus. But that was kind of exciting. Or you can have a search that's like a minute and a half. You have to find these many hides, and you have a minute and a half, and it's a speed drill. So they have some speed drills, you have time constraints. And And they just work different skills. And sometimes you can get kind of bummed about, oh, my dog didn't do well and at this trial that was probably testing more different strengths, or I'm going to do really well in another trial. And that's what's so cool about nose work. I think it's important to add that odor we can't control. Odor is going to change from the first dog that runs to the last dog that runs. And your dog could be tired, or you that's why we rest them as much and keep them hydrated and stuff. But it, I still. We all bum when we don't find all the hides, but sometimes the dog cannot get into odor and they don't pick up any odor. You've trained them. There's nothing you could do about it. Nothing you or your dog can do about it. And we're really trying to work on the mental, game of handlers, and that we have to, let these things go, and mistakes are going to happen, and you're not going to be perfect. We can't control odor. And that you'll talk to the judges, and the judges that they have at NACSW are professional detection people, for the most part. And that's really exciting. And you can learn from these, military or ex-military police search and rescue teams. And they'll tell you, boy, that hide every dog was finding. And then the next 10, none of the dogs could find it. So it just, it's cool to learn about odor movement and that kind of stuff. And that takes, time and time. And being a, I was an AKC judge for a while. I didn't continue my license. And then I teach a lot. I see a lot of people, a lot of teams. So I learn a lot. I watch this, a number of dogs run the same setups. And that just comes with time and experience. And it just is cool. So larger areas, more hides, unknown number of hides, sometimes a short amount of time. Sometimes you get a lot of time in a large space, and you get to work search in really cool places. And then AKC has a really cool detective title, which you have to be perfect, absolutely perfect, 10 qualifying runs and find every hide, no errors. And that's fun. And they do some really neat stuff with the detective program, inside, outside, combo searches. Whereas a NACSW championship is kind of more of a point progression that you're just competing with yourself. And you get points as you go. So if you long as you're accruing a minimum number of points, you can eventually get your championship. Yeah, there's so many options out there. Like I might take a young dog to a different venue, like a USCSS is one of the organizations, just to get her some practice. I actually am going to an AKC trial with her to get practice before I do NACSW. And the other thing, just one last thing about the rules too, is AKC, those who are familiar with AKC, it's pretty much always like a three legs to get a title. That's kind of their formula for most, obedience, agility. You have to get three qualifying scores to get your title. So it's the same with their SentMer program. You can get three. It's element driven. You get three container passes, you pass novice, then you get three at the next level advanced. Where NACSW, it's more, there's two titling tracks. One is similar to AKC, where you get your individual like element titles, but their main one, nose work one, two, and three, it's based, you have to be 100% for the whole day. They did change some rules where at nose work three, you can have one error and get like half of it, get a leg toward a title. But in nose work one and two, you'll find dogs get kind of stuck there, but they'll go really high in AKC because you can maybe, kind of trial more often and just get those individual legs on different days. But in NACSW, like when Anthony went recently, he had to do four perfect searches to get his nose work one. And that is an element of just, more focus and training and being really prepared for that. And I don't trial as much in NACSW. I don't trial it. Maybe if I even go once a month now, maybe it's only once every 2 months. Whereas in AKC, you could go to agility trial every weekend and you just keep accruing all these legs and kind of have a lower pass rate on individual legs, but you can go to so many trials, you're going to eventually get your titles. And ACSW, I kind of like that intensity of like, this is it. I got to keep my act together the whole day. And that's hard for some people. And I think some people don't like that setup. It's dogs have to stay in the car, not too much social, you can't socialize with them. So there's just a lot to pick from. So that's what's cool about the scent work, nose work. There's venues to pick that's best for your dog. And ACSW supports reactive dogs. They actually that's why they keep dogs out to a minimum. You can wear a red bandana, whereas AKC requires dogs to have to be manageable in public places with the public can be at these trials. So dogs have to be have certain man ability to manage themselves. And yeah, so there, and then you have online, there's a lot of online opportunities. Again, if people aren't willing to train online, they're probably not going to do an online title sport, but they're pretty popular. You can get a lot of online titles and across very many sports now, and Nose Work is one of them. And they have some pretty good, Fenzi has one, and some other places have online titles, just so you can say I did something. And people are really proud of their ribbons. I will say, the we all like a ribbon, so that's something that the dog doesn't care about. But the human does, and you see these teams are so proud.
I was just thinking about like how you, as you were talking about like the higher levels and everything. One thing that it didn't really cross my mind, and I don't know if this is true for other people when they first start nose work, but I didn't realize the amount involved as you get higher. Like if, I'm not talking about, okay, I taught my dog just to find this scent or this item or whatever. I'm talking about like higher levels and the nuances or things that you have to really process and think about. For example, suspended hides, like hides that are in at a higher level, hidden at a higher level is what I mean, where they're suspended somewhere. The way in which the odor could be moving because of like a draft in a room, or putting an odor like next to maybe a window in a corner, like and the wall like juts in or out. You know what I'm saying? Like there's so many.
Or like hides on a vehicle that will blow under the car to the other side, and the dog's alert on the wrong side because of the wind.
Actually, yeah, I remember that happened at your place with Journey. I remember one day there was just enough wind and he kept indicating on the opposite side of the car. I find that interesting. And it was making me think about, I think it was the last time I was up at your place when Tammy did that little event for those
Challenge,
2 days. Yeah, the challenge. And that hide that no one could find
the suspended
was
hide,
ended just in the middle of the room, just hanging there, and no one could find it. And it was so interesting because it was almost like, in a way, obvious because it was just hanging right there in the middle of the room, like a lampshade would be. Not one, like, what were there, 20 or 30 dogs? Not one dog could.
No, I don't think any dog really got it.
I just find, so I just find like all the things like that very interesting because I like that part about training. For just for me in general, I like the things that you have to really think through and be thoughtful about and train through.
What's cool is that one example of the vehicle. I had actually class today. We worked outside. It was windy. And there was, I thought the wind was blowing one way, and it was, but then it changed. And so the one tire hide was kind of coming over to the other side of the car, and dogs really struggle. But this one lab just went right over the Labrador. They're just great. They went to the opposite side, worked it right around the source. And that's, I'll train dogs, or I test them. Some dogs will get stuck there. And then other dogs just know, oh no, it's 3 feet on the other side, and they just know, like the gradients are like less, and they just know they're not a source. The actual birch source is very different. Here's an example. Another talk about food. Somebody coined this. I can't remember if it was Mike McManus, but dogs never fringe on food, a hot dog. So your dog, there's not going to be a hot dog here, and your dog's going to go, oh, the hot dog's a foot away. It's because the dogs will never fringe on hot dog. And that's why they do pair hides with food, is because the dogs will always go to source because the food's there. But odor is different. Dogs will kind of fringe alert, and be fringe alert means they're further away from source. And then an accessible will be a fringe type situation. But we can teach dogs to find the actual source. Like, the actual source is additive. It's pumping out more particles into the air, and dogs understand that difference, the denseness of the particles, constantly being dispersed into the air versus an area where it's pooling or something. And that's where it gets really interesting too. The pooling versus inaccessible versus actual source gets really into the deep, learning theory, and I mean odor theory, and how these dogs figure this freaking stuff out.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Even like, and even like what you were saying before, multiple dogs could run ahead of you. So the dog that runs first could potentially have an advantage because no other dog has been in there. But then, as you go down that line up, multiple dogs, unless they have to change the odor quick because it got contaminated or something, right? Multiple dogs could be running through that room. And now that odor is circulating.
And you got drool, you got the
Yeah,
dog's
the
drool. And like
drool, the
if a dog falls on something, you'll get the next five dogs will fall because there's drool, and it's probably drool in odor, not at source, but in odor. So there's odor somewhere that's collecting, dogs alert, the next, and the dog's not only alert because the drool and the like pooled odor, they smell the disturbance by the dog. When a dog thinks they find something, they're just emitting, hormones and secreting stuff. And I can train for that. I've actually had my dog who's either retired or whatever, just play around an area and create all this disturbance on a cold box, and then bring that my class in, and then they search. And usually I can never simulate that, right? But in a trail, they'll get hit, they'll just fall, the dog will fall for it. But we try to simulate these, or opening a door over and over. So if you're going into search, the door's opening and closing, the odor's being pulled and withdrawn and pulled and withdrawn. And that's also very hard to simulate in training. So yeah, there's just fascinating stuff about it.
I just find it interesting. Like, it makes me think of the first trial I went to. One of the rooms was this classroom, and it was actually two rooms connected. And the hide
Exciting.
was in the second room. But it was so interesting because I thought my dog falsely alerted because he shot, like, we start the start line was in the first room, entering the first room. So you're in the hallway. He shot right through the first room into the second room and alerted immediately. And I debated on even calling it because I was like, that was just too fast. I thought he didn't even take the time to search for anything. And sure enough, it was the odor. But I just, it's just so fascinating to
It
watch
is.
go
Yeah. So
through
we
that
train on
process.
productive areas. You can have blank areas. You can have areas with no odor that you have to call it blank. And you can have multiple rooms. I've had people go to a nose work two, and they actually had an area with three rooms, like a living room and two bedrooms. And they were really small rooms, but it still like was a mental,
Yeah, it's just
shock to the
fascinating to
handlers.
watch the dog work through and process that stuff in those scenarios.
They know where there's no odor, and they will go to where odor is. Yeah.
So tell
Fun stuff.
everyone where they can find you, website, social media, all that stuff.
Okay. My SavvyDogSports.com is my website. I do try to keep that up to date. And then Fenzi Dog Sports Academy. I teach every term. There are six terms a year. There's one just started this week. I'm teaching Nose Work 101 right now, and it'll be open until like middle of April to sign up. But there's 101 is taught every term at Fenzi through different instructors. And then I'm also teaching a class on, it's a hard class on building resilience in Nose Work dogs. And it's a tough topic just because it's just the nature of it, right? To help dogs work through some struggles. So I teach a various classes there. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Savvy Dog Sports. And I never did talk about my dogs. I never introduced my
Oh,
dogs.
yes. Tell us
I
where
was
you
just talking about myself.
are.
So I do have
What bad dog.
a
Look at you talking about yourself.
no.
That's so messed up. No, I'm just kidding.
Typical sport dog trainer only cares about yourself and your ribbon.
I just figured
There
everybody
you
knows. What did you say, Vinny?
go.
It's a typical sport dog trainer only cares about yourself and your ribbons.
That's funny. That's funny. So my oldest dog is Drac. He's 9 and a half. And he's really in a, we're just in a good spot. We're in that, like, he feels like a pair of comfortable worn jeans. And he's just great to go and trial with. So he's my dog I'm taking into the summit trials for NACSW. And then Moxie, who's six, she it's a fantastic dog. She have going through some sound sensitivity things that I'm working through, so she's been taking a little bit of a break just to kind of decompress her. And then I did lose my first nose work dog, Savvy, in November last year. She lived to almost 17. There's just no not much to be sad about for that. She was my wonderful dog. Started her M4 in nose work, so she's my first nose work dog, and my first TDX dog. And then my new puppy Katniss that Anthony has met. She's from California, and from a dog icon that I always wanted a puppy from. I met Kelly and Icon through Fenzi, and I Did not need another dog at the time because I had the three and I added a fourth dog. So I'm down to three now. It's much more manageable.
And she's, I think you said she's more like the highest drive dog you've
Yeah,
had.
she is. She's definitely different, higher drive, but she's also can be very reserved and very soft, I'm finding. So, which is fine. I'm happy with her energy level. So yeah, she definitely is my only dog that's super ball crazy. And I think that's just bred into them. Yeah, so I got the three dogs and so I have 10 months, 6 and 9. It's a great spread. Actually the 6 and 9 year old are a little close because they're actually more like 2 and a half or 3 years. They're exactly, yeah, 3 years apart. So yeah, they keep me really busy. I've been really lucky. I was listening to your guys' talk with Aaron about breeding and stuff, and I'll tell you what I've done, and I've actually helped teams get a good Belgian from this advice. I got my dogs all came from proven parents, at least one parent, if not both parents, proven bit ability, proven training, higher level titles, not just novice level titles. Dogs that I'd noticed and in the ring doing scoring well. And I do think those traits are passed down. I think that ability, or just mainly the bit ability, but even I do think some certain training ability gets passed down. And it just makes my life easier, right? I will always get a dog from proven performance parents or lineage at least. I think that's very important, and then it's made a difference. I just look back and reflect on how all my dogs have gotten along. I've never had a crate rotate. I'm not saying there's not squabbles and stuff, but the puppy's not even staying in a crate at night. She's been out of the crate for months, and they coexist very, very well. And I'm just really happy about that. So kudos to all those breeders that do the hard work so that we all can enjoy our dogs.
Well, thank you for coming on.
You're
And
welcome.
just to give yourself a quick plug for your Fenzi class. So it closes in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think
So
around the
today
15th.
is
Yeah.
April 3rd. So yeah, you said I think it closes the 15th, and that's for nose work, introduction to nose work 101. Is that correct?
Yeah, intro to 101. I'm gonna try to pull this up really quick. Enrollment does end April 15th. Yep. So is that tax day?
I
Tax
have no
day.
idea.
Yeah, and my working spots are full, but there's auditing spots, and it's very affordable, $65. Fenzi has not raised their prices in the whole time I've been there, the whole time they've actually been in business, so that's a pretty good deal, but there's a
And you
lot
get
of
to,
resources. Yeah.
yeah, I was just saying, and you get to hold on to that even after the class is done. You could still log into your account and rewatch that years later.
For a year, if you have it for a year, and you have to buy one thing a year.
Oh,
But
okay.
there's so many great classes. Like Aaron has great classes, and there's a Controlled Unleash class that I think Controlled Unleash is fantastic. That is geared to a lot of, I would say, kind of pet people with dealing with out in the public, around other dogs or triggers or reactivity. And Amy Cook has some great classes on play way, playing with your dog, helping reactive dogs. And there's just such a wealth of information there. And every class has a free sample lecture. So I think people forget that, to go and look at the classes, and you could actually get like a lecture from each view, a lecture from each instructor, and kind of learn a little bit about them and pick up some really good tips actually.
Oh, that's
And they
cool. I
have
didn't know that
actually,
they had that.
yeah, and they actually have a pet portal or pet section for some like on demand, I believe it's on demand pet maybe webinars,
Oh,
kind of
cool.
like pet webinars. Yeah, kind of forget to promote that a little bit. And I have my veterinarian friends, they're always wanting to send their pet clients to somewhere to learn a little, just whether it's just like potty training, or just some enrichment, or some maybe behavior modification stuff, minor stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of really good resource out there. That's why, maybe it's not you're taking a class, but there's like something on demand that you can watch for an hour.
Yeah.
And I think there's even some downloadable documents. Like I think there is a puppy one for just what to do with your puppy, and it's a free downloadable document. So yeah, there's a lot of great resources there. So
Well, thank you for coming on. We really are happy that you got to
yeah, thank you.
come on
No,
and talk
I was so excited when you asked me.
and I'll
And
see you in a couple of weeks at the trial.
see you in a couple weeks.
All right. Well,
Thanks,
thank
you
you.
guys. See you
Thanks.
guys later.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Vinny.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Canine Classroom. If you liked the show, make sure to smack that like button, share the show with your friends, and give us a rating. Until next time, class dismissed.